you're here. Fellowship's sweeter, knowing you're near. It's so good to see you. I hope that it's fair. Everyone loves you.
We're glad you're here. It's Thursday, January 2nd, 2025. Happy New Year.
If you've tuned in all week, you know how it works. Kathleen Jennings will do some special readings, followed by a variety of scenes of It's a Wonderful Life as portrayed by the Great News Radio Theater Troupe. So I hope you're blessed by today's broadcast. Here's Kathleen Jennings.
Well, Mark, did you know that all that glitters is not gold?
Oh. Though it seems pretty shiny and attractive and enticing.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Potter says to George at one point, "Oh, yes, George Bailey, whose ship has come in, providing he has brains enough to climb aboard." Mm-hmm. When old man Potter offers George a job with his firm, it's a defining moment for the young Mr. Bailey. Remember the context. It is right after the Martini House dedication scene, which ends with George and Mary turning down an offer to join Sam Wainwright and his wife on a spontaneous jaunt down to Florida. They watch wistfully as Sam and his mink and jewel-clad wife ride off in their chauffeur-driven car. In a sense, it's another loss for George. The third time he's passed up an opportunity to leave Bedford Falls. Even if this would have been only a short-term trip. As the couple walks back to the beaten-up Bailey car, interestingly, even Mary, the stoic, stay-at-home wife, seems touched by regret. A frustrated George kicks the driver's side door shut. So, in the next scene, when George takes a puff on the cigar offered to him in Potter's office and starts hearing the old man's proposition, it truly is as if his ship has come in. Potter is offering George more than a job with his firm. He's extending him an opportunity to fulfill his latent dreams of travel and adventure. He's promising him $20,000 a year, nearly 10 times what he's making now. He's offering him, in essence, a makeup call to at least get out and travel. If not, leave Bedford Falls permanently, to explore the world, to be the man he always wanted to be. Potter describes George to his face as a young man who's been dying to get out on his own ever since he was born, a young man who has to sit by and watch his friends go places because he's trapped, frittering his life away by playing nursemaid to a lot of garlic eaters. Though George wouldn't have approved of the anti-Italian racial slur at the end, it's clear that Potter has touched the young man's Achilles heel, his latent regret that he's given up his dreams. This, of course, is like the devil tempting Jesus. He knew that after 40 days in the wilderness, Jesus was hungry, so he offered him a quick solution to his hunger. In the same way, Potter knew George was hungry to live out his do-important-stuff dreams and offered him a quick solution to his hunger. And George is poised to say yes. Though, of course, he wants Mary to sign off on the deal, he realizes, as Potter says, that his ship has come in and he's prepared to leap aboard. But then comes the handshake. For George, Potter's touch, the script says Potter's hand feels like a cold mackerel, is like selling his soul to the devil. A wake-up call. A realization that though your head sometimes says one thing, take the job, you deserve it, you have to follow your heart, which often says something else. George not only turns down the offer, he calls Potter a scurvy little spider. You spin your little webs, and you think the whole world revolves around you and your money, he rants. Well, it doesn't, Mr. Potter. What wins out, as it has before, is George Bailey's integrity, his unwillingness to put his desires above those of the communities, his unwillingness, in Star Wars terms, to go over to the dark side, and his ability to realize that not everything that glitters is gold. Had George accepted Potter's offer, a sea change would have washed over Bedford Falls like a tsunami. As his employer, Potter would have pressured George to buy into his selfish value system. Money, not people, would have been the bottom line, and Bedford Falls would have become the poorer for it. Meanwhile, though, George may have traveled, pampered Mary, even fixed the newel post on the staircase, something new and more insidious than his go-places-do-things dreams would have begun eating him from the inside. The realization that he'd given up something all the gold in the world couldn't buy back, his personal integrity. As it is, George seemed to have asked himself the question from Mark 8:36. What good is it for a man to gain the whole world, yet forfeit his soul? And George had the courage to find the answer.
All that glitters is not always good. Lessons learned from this 52 little lessons from It's a Wonderful Life, written by Bob Welch, 2012, Thomas Nelson. Great additions to this week's edition of Mark and Friends as we continue to air portions of It's a Wonderful Life. Actually, if you listen all week long, you'll hear it in its entirety. It is also archived at greatnewsradio.org. And so we'll continue with the theater troupe's presentation of It's a Wonderful Life.
Yes, sir. That's where they spent their honeymoon. That's where they started their lives together. Mary made the leaky old house a home, while George toiled away at the building and loan office. And Bailey houses started popping up all over the place, mostly owned by people that used to live in Potter's Field. And Potter had had just about enough of that. So after a couple of years, old man Potter decided to call our George into his office.
Sit down, George. Sit down. Have a cigar?
Well, thank you, sir. That's quite a cigar, Mr. Potter.
Oh, you like it? I'll send you a box.
Well, I suppose I'll find out sooner or later, but just what exactly did you want to see me about?
George, now that's just what I like so much about you. George, you see, I'm an old man, and most people hate me. But I don't like them either, so that makes it all even. You know just as well as I do that I run practically everything in this town, but the Bailey Building and Loan. You know also that for a number of years I've been trying to get control of it, or kill it, but I haven't been able to do it. You've been stopping me. In fact, you've beaten me, George, and that takes some doing. Take during the Depression, for instance. You and I were the only ones that kept our heads. You saved the Building and Loan, and I saved all the rest.
Yes, but most people say you stole all the rest.
The envious ones say that, George. The suckers. Now, let's look at your side. Young man, 27, 28, married, making 40 a week?
45.
45.
45.
Now, if you were some ordinary yokel, I'd say you're doing fine. But George Bailey is intelligent, ambitious. He hates the Building and Loan almost as much as I do. He's been dying to get out of town ever since he was born. A young man, the smartest one of the crowd, mind you, who has to sit by and watch his friends go places. Because he's trapped. Trapped into frittering his life away, playing nursemaid to a lot of garlic eaters. Do I paint a correct picture, George, or do I exaggerate?
What's your point, Mr. Potter?
My point is, George, you're the only man in town who's licked me. I want to hire you, manage my affairs. I'll start you out at $20,000 a year.
$20,000 a year?
You wouldn't mind living in the nicest house in town, buying your wife a lot of fine clothes, a couple of business trips to New York a year, maybe once in a while Europe. You wouldn't mind that, would you, George?
Would I? You're not talking to somebody else around here, are you? Are you sure you're talking to me? I'm George Bailey. Don't you remember me? The Building and Loan, remember?
Yes, George Bailey, whose ship has just come in, providing he has brains enough to climb aboard.
Well, what about the building and loan?
Oh, confound it, man. I'm offering you a 3-year contract at $20,000 a year. Is it a deal or isn't it?
Now, Mr. Potter, I know I ought to jump at the chance, but I wonder if you might give me 24 hours to think about it.
Sure, sure, sure. You go home and talk to your wife.
Yeah, I'd like that.
In the meantime, I'll draw up the papers, and soon you'll be managing my affairs.
Your affairs? Your affairs? No. No, I don't need 24 hours. The answer's no, doggone it. You sit around here and you spin your little webs and you think the whole world revolves around you and your money. Well, it doesn't, Mr. Potter. In the whole vast configuration of things, I'd say you are nothing but a scurvy little spider.
What did Mr. Potter want, George?
Oh, nothing. Nothing. Just talk. Nothing. Oh, gee, Mary Hatch, why in the world would you ever want to marry a guy like me anyway?
To keep from being an old maid.
I was going to give you the moon, but what have I given you? Not even a new dress. Not for months. You could have married Sam Wainwright. You could have married anybody else in town.
I didn't want to marry anybody else in town. I want my baby to look like you.
You didn't even have a honeymoon. I promised you... You're what?
My baby.
You mean... Mary, you're on the nest?
George Bailey lassos the stork.
Well, Mary had her baby. A boy.
You don't say.
Then she had a girl. Night after night, George would come home late from the office. Things weren't good with the building and loan. Potter was bearing down hard. Then came the war. Mary had another baby by then, but still had time to run the USO. Gower and Uncle Billy sold war bonds. Violet entertained the troops. Bert the cop was wounded in North Africa, got the Silver Star. Ernie the taxi driver parachuted into France. But Harry Bailey topped them all. A Navy flyer, he shot down 15 planes, 2 of them as they were about to crash into a transport full of soldiers.
But what about George?
4F, on account of his ear. George fought the Battle of Bedford Falls. Air raid warden, paper drives, scrap drives, rubber drives. On VE Day, he wept and prayed. On VJ Day, he wept and prayed again.
We're getting pretty close to today, aren't we, sir?
Yes, Clarence. You now know almost everything you need to know about George Bailey. All except what happens that finds him down there at this moment, wanting to die. Today's the day before Christmas, and Billy's at the bank to make a deposit when he runs into Potter.
Well, 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 Mr. Henry F. Potter, come to the bank to deposit some more loot? How do you like the news in the paper, Mr. Potter? Harry Bailey wins Congressional Medal of Honor. Let me see that newspaper. Here you go. Go on, keep it. I'm off to make a deposit.
Well, well, well. Look what I found. Let's go to the back.
Good morning, Mr. Bailey.
Good morning, Horace. Here you are. Deposit slip, bank book, and a very Merry Christmas to you.
You too, Mr. Bailey. You want to make a deposit?
Well, certainly.
Well, it's customary to bring the money with you.
It's gone. Where did I put it? Where did I put that money?
A terrible thing, Clarence. Uncle Billy couldn't find the money because the envelope with the $8,000 was folded up in that newspaper he gave to old man Potter. At the same time as Billy started looking for the deposit, Violet came to visit George at the building and loan.
Oh, hello, Vi. What's wrong?
You see right through me, don't you?
How much do you need?
I hate doing this to you, George, but I won't be asking for any more after this.
You planning on robbing a bank, Vi?
I'm going to Manhattan.
What's in Manhattan?
Why, everything's in Manhattan. A new start, at least.
That's a big step, Vi. What's the matter with starting a new life right here in Bedford Falls?
Well, I'll be. Never thought I'd hear that from you, George Bailey. I thought you hated this place.
I did, but this town has a charm of its own.
Nah, I've made a decision. There's a midnight train tonight, and I plan to be on it.
It takes a lot of character to leave your hometown and start all over again. Here, now here's some dough.
Oh, no, George, don't.
Now, what do you want to do? Hawk your furs and that hat? You want to walk to New York? You know they charge for meals and rent there just same as they do here in Bedford Falls.
Yeah, sure.
It's a loan. That's my business. Building and loan. Besides, you'll get a job. Good luck to you.
I'm glad I know you, George Bailey. Merry Christmas.
George!
Now, what's the matter, Uncle Billy?
The money, the $8,000,
Billy? What happened to it?
I thought I had it. I just don't know what happened.
Now, well, the first place you look is in your coat pocket. I told you to put it there when you left.
After hours of looking for the money, Uncle Billy and George came to an impasse.
Oh, I'm no good to you, George. I'm no good.
Well, Uncle Billy, we've got to find that money. Think!
I can't think anymore, George. It hurts.
Where's that money, you stupid, silly old fool? Do you realize what this means? It means bankruptcy and scandal and prison. One of us is going to jail. Well, it's not gonna be me.
Coat and hat.
Left him at the office.
Isn't it wonderful about Harry? We're famous, George. I'll bet I had 50 calls today about the parade and banquet.
Must she keep playing that?
I have to practice for the party tonight, Daddy.
Mommy says we can stay up until midnight and sing Christmas carols.
Better hurry and shave. The families will be here soon.
The families? I don't want the families over here.
Excuse me.
Have a hectic day.
Oh, yeah, another big red-letter day for the Baileys.
Daddy, the Browns next door have a new car. You should see it.
Well, what's the matter with our car? Isn't it good enough for you?
Yes, Daddy. Excuse me, excuse me.
Excuse you for what?
I burped.
All right, darling. You're excused. Now, go upstairs and see what little Zuzu wants.
What's the matter with Zuzu?
Oh, she caught a cold coming home from school. They gave her a flower and she didn't want to crush it, so she didn't button up her coat. The doctor says it's nothing serious.
Was the doctor here?
I called him right away.
Is she running a temperature?
Just a teensy one.
Oh, gosh, it's this old house. I don't know why we don't all have pneumonia, this drafty old barn. We might as well be living in a refrigerator. Why'd we have to live here in the first place and stay around this measly, crummy old town?
George, what's wrong?
Everything's wrong. You call this a happy family? Why'd we have to have all these kids?
Dad, how do you spell frankincense?
Oh, I don't know. Ask your mother.
Where are you going?
Up to see Zuzu.
Hi, Daddy.
Well, what happened to you?
I want a flower.
Where do you think you're going?
I want to give my flower a drink.
Here, now give Daddy the flower. I'll give it a drink.
Look, Daddy, some of its petals came off. Paste it.
All right, now there it is. It's good as new.
Give the flower a drink.
Okay, now will you try to get some sleep?
I'm not sleepy. I want to look at my flower.
I know, but you just go to sleep, and then you can dream about it, and it'll be a whole garden.
It will?
Uh-huh.
Telephone!
I'll get it. Hello? Yes, this is Mrs. Bailey. Oh, thank you, Mrs. Welch. The doctor says she'll be out of bed in time for her Christmas dinner.
Is that Zuzu's teacher?
Yes.
Let me speak to her. Hello, Mrs. Welch. This is George Bailey. Say, what kind of teacher are you anyway? What do you mean sending her home like that half-naked?
George!
Is this the sort of thing we pay taxes for, to have teachers like you? Silly, stupid, careless people who send our kids home without any clothes on. Oh, that's stupid.
Hello, Mrs. Welch? I want to apologize for... She hung up.
I'll hang her up.
Hey, who do you think you are?
Hello? Who is this?
Mr.
Welch. That's fine, Mr. Welch. Gives me a chance to tell you what I really think of your wife.
George!
Will you let me handle this? Hello? Oh, you will, huh? Okay, Mr. Welch, anytime you think you're man enough, you can... Hello?
Oh. Daddy, how do you spell hallelujah?
Well, what do you think I am, a dictionary? Janie, haven't you learned that silly tune yet? You play it over and over again. Now stop it! Stop it!
George, what are you doing?
I'm sorry, Mary. Janie, I didn't mean... You go on and practice. Pete, I owe you an apology, too. What did you want to know?
Nothing, Daddy.
Well, what's the matter with everybody? Janie, go on. I told you to practice. Now go on. Play.
Oh, Daddy.
George, why must you torture the children? Why don't you just...
Mary.
Where's Daddy going?
Bedford, 247, please.
Is Daddy in trouble?
Yes, Pete.
Shall I pray for him?
Yes, Janie. Pray very hard.
Me too?
You too, Tommy. Hello, Uncle Billy?
So, that's it, George? You're short $8,000?
I'll pay any sort of interest, Mr. Potter. If you still want the building and loan...
You say it was lost. Did you notify the police?
No, I haven't. With Harry's homecoming tomorrow, well,
why come to me? Why not go to Sam Wainwright?
I can't get a hold of him. He's in Europe.
What kind of security would I have, George?
I have a $15,000 life insurance policy.
How much is your equity in it?
$500.
And you want $8,000. You used to be so cocky. You were going to go out and conquer the world. You once called me a warped, frustrated old man. What are you but a warped, frustrated young man crawling in here on your hands and knees for help? You're worth more dead than you're alive.
I'll do anything, Mr. Potter. Please help me.
You know what I'm going to do for you? As a stockholder of the building and loan, I'm calling the state examiner to get a warrant for your arrest. Misappropriation of funds. Manipulation. Malfeasance. Go on and run! You can't hide in a little town like this!
George, sir. Well, after running out of Potter's office, George ended up at Martini's bar. He's had a couple of drinks, and he's just sitting there.
What's he saying?
Shh. Listen.
Dear Father in heaven, I'm not a praying man, but if you're up there and you can hear me, just show me the way.
Are you all right, George?
Why you drink so much, my friend? You don't feel good. Please go home, Mr. Bailey.
Bailey? Which Bailey?
Oh, this gentleman is a Mr. George Bailey.
George Bailey, huh? The next time you talk to my wife like that, you'll get worse. It isn't enough she slaves teaching her stupid kids how to read and write. You've got to ball her out.
Hey, you get out of here, Mr. Welch. You hit my best friend.
Oh, all right.
Oh, Mr. Bailey, you okay?
Who was that?
Oh, that was Mr. Welch, but don't you worry. He don't come into this place no more. I'll get something for your face. It's bleeding.
I'm all right.
Oh, no. Please don't go away, Mr. Bailey. Please, don't.
George is headed to the bridge now, Clarence. Can you see him?
He looks like he's gonna jump.
It's time, Clarence.
Well, it's also time to close out the program. We'll pick right up here tomorrow on the Friday edition of Mark and Friends and conclude the theater troupe's presentation of It's a Wonderful Life. What a fantastic job they all did.
You're listening to a broadcast that was aired a few years back as I appreciate Kathleen Jennings' readings from the book 52 Little Lessons for It's a Wonderful Life by Bob Welch, along with the fantastic job that the Great News Radio Theater Troupe did. If you missed a portion of today's broadcast or Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or can't tune in tomorrow, these programs are archived under the Mark and Friends tab at greatnewsradio.org and wluj.org. If you'd like a CD of the whole It's a Wonderful Life by the Great News Radio Theater Troupe, send in a donation and request it to WLUJ 600 West Mason Street, Springfield, Illinois, 62702, or write Great News Radio, P.O. Box 550, Fisher, Illinois, 61843. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of our radio listening family. This is Mark Burns with the Ministry of Great News Media. God bless you and have a great day, night, and Happy New Year!